there seems to be some disagreement on what's going to happen with housing demand. Let's take a look at the data and talk about it.
You are about to hear the opinions, suggestions, and observations of a licensed real estate broker in California. Since each situation can be unique, do not consider anything said here as legal advice for your specific needs. Always seek out the advice of a suitable professional in your area for advice tailored to your situation. Please remember that when following advice, your results may vary. Please also understand that the information provided here is not intended to cover all aspects of the subject material, but rather a sample of issues the speaker considers important.
What do you seem to understand? I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me!
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Real Estate Realities with the Rebel Broker. My name's Robert Whitelaw, and I am the Rebel Broker. Licensed real estate broker in the state of California and member of the National Association of Realtors. Once again, trying to light the way on your path to success. I hope you all are having a great week. Once again, I was trying to wrap my head around the whole China yuan price drop market crazy, U.S. market crash, all these other crazy things, and try to figure out what we should all take away from that. And I was considering doing that for today's show, but then my head started hurting and I decided that just wasn't the direction I wanted to go. So I went for my next favorite of the news that's been coming out over the last few days, and that relates to housing demand. From all of the usual suspects, things are wonderful. Everything's great. Carry on. The Association of Realtors, the National Association and the California Association are all talking about just wonderful things. But, you know, there's a lot of contradictory data out there. I thought we'd cover it real quick, but also try to figure out where things are going. You know, I like to be able to give you at least some sort of data to hang your hat on and say, you know, I feel like this is where things are going to go, and then point to some numbers or some trends or something that kind of leads us down a path to decide what makes sense. What next step should you take depending on what your goals are? And this is a tough one. There are so many balls in the air, and particularly relating to things that are not specific to real estate. Now, one thing is everyone still wants to talk about the Fed raising interest rates. I sort of put a stake in the ground here and said, no, they will not raise interest rates in September. They will threaten to, but they won't. And they won't until after the elections for president next year. Or the other possibility that I was entertaining was they would say they will and they would, but by a ridiculously small amount, just so that they can then not emphasize the actual amount of the increase in interest rates and tout it as this amazing acknowledgement of how great everything is. It would be one of those two things. The problem is it'll be less about solving problems and more about political expediency, I think, is where it's going to go. So I'm willing to absolutely to say at least that. I know that's, you know, I'm kind of going with two options. I'm leaning more towards it just won't happen. But I get the feeling that at some point they have to prove that they believe. They have to make some sort of gesture that says, we believe everything is wonderful. So much of the news is linked that way, and leaning that way, that it just makes sense that there needs to be some sort of gesture on the part of the suits, right? The folks in charge, the people who are supposed to know so much more than us. Those folks are supposed to do something aside from talk about how wonderful things are and do something that they say would happen if things were going well. And they were always saying that if the economy recovered well enough, interest rates would get raised. So there may be a weird bipolar political magnet on this one. The typical political magnet is don't rock the boat till after the election. That's what we tend to see historically, right? They don't want to screw with anything until after an election. But in this case, there are folks who want to say we fixed the problem and that something like this would be something they could make a bullet point in a speech to say, we did it. We fixed it. And this is here's the Fed independent organization that determines interest rates. So clearly we didn't have anything to do with nudging them one direction or the other, acknowledging through actual policy that the economy is now officially better. Everyone celebrate and thank us for, okay, maybe we caused the problem, but now we've solved it, right? So they can politically kind of get a little bit of ground off of it. So in other words, I wouldn't worry about interest rates. Even if they are quote unquote raised, I think it'll be by such a small amount that we're talking infinitesimal changes in what your real rate is when it comes time to borrow, or we'll have no change at all. And we'll just get the normal fluctuations that we've been getting based on how people feel about things. The first thing I wanted to cover was an article that came out from Housing Wire, where they're basically saying housing demand is going to surge for the next 10 years. And they chalk that up to baby boomers. It can't be baby boomers. Well, they say boomers. Boomers, Hispanics, and millennials will drive household formation. What's interesting is when you actually go to other sources and look at job prospects, earning potential, abilities to gain income with these groups they're specifically talking about. In all of the big areas, I'm wondering where these folks are going to be making this money to be buying houses. Where are these folks going to be building the credit to be able to go into that kind of indebtedness? We still have an awful lot of millennials with tons of educational debt, right? Where do we think that are living in their parents' basement? They can't afford rent. I'm just not real sure where they see this group suddenly becoming huge participants in markets anywhere. So that's one thing. If you just go off and Google data on future income prospects for a lot of these folks in relation to their already set indebtedness from school, it's not really a pretty picture. The Mortgage Bankers Association believes that between 13.9 and 15.9 million additional households will be formed by 2024, making the next decade one of the strongest in housing in U.S. history. Household formation has been depressed in recent years by a long jobless recovery and by a lull in the growth of the working age population, and that was according to the Mortgage Bankers Association Vice President of Research and Economics. And I love it when we see this kind of data come out where they'll come out and call it a jobless recovery, but our unemployment rate is supposedly at the level that is by economists considered full employment. It's like everyone just sort of winks and nudges that, you know what, that unemployment number that's out there, it's not really the real number. It's a number that makes a great headline so people kind of think things are good. But just this kind of tacit, just kind of go along with it idea that we really it just blows my mind. Let's see. She goes on to say improving employment markets will build on major demographic trends, including maturing of baby boomers, Hispanics, and millennials to create strong growth in both owner and rental housing markets over the next decade. One other interesting thing to sort of blend with that is if you look at the sort of jobs we're talking about, that would likely get created for a lot of these millennials and folks. If you go to the total other end of the news spectrum, right? So let's not talk to economics types and those folks. Let's talk to technologists. The projection people make as it relates to automation and robotics and what those things will be doing in the workforce, it's really kind of mind-blowing. And when those first robotic steps are achieved in terms of doing certain jobs, right? So they're already talking about eliminating truckers. I don't know if you've heard about this one. The self-driving car, the very first place that's going to get hit squarely between the eyes by that technology is cross-state truckers. They're going to be able to completely eliminate the part of the cab where the guy sleeps. There's not going to need a passenger seat. It'll have one seat so that someone can jump in it and drive it when necessary for parking or whatever. But they're going to be able to put enough fuel on one of those things for it to go ridiculously long distances because it won't have all this extra space to accommodate a person while going across country. But the automatic driving industry is first going to completely unemploy every trucker in the country. It'll take a little time, but for that very first step. But imagine how quickly it'll happen once people stop, once the shippers realize how much money they're saving through automation. The upfront nut they're going to have to pay for each truck for automation is going to be big. But then when they actually start seeing how the bills play out over the next few months, it's going to happen in a heartbeat. It'll be a 18-month rollover, and suddenly we're going to have a lot of unemployed truckers. Let's extract that to the next level. Who supports truckers? How many truck stops do you pass when you're heading from A to B on any big interstate? Well, when I'm driving from the Bay Area to Los Angeles, I sure do pass an awful lot. Now imagine a world where suddenly no one needs to stop to get food or take a shower or to fuel the truck or to rent a hotel room if they're tired of sleeping in the cab. Do you think that impacts the world at all? Suddenly no one's got a job at the truck stop because truckers aren't stopping. Or if we assume truckers account for what? They call it a truck stop for a reason, right? So if we assume 50% of their business comes from truckers, suddenly they've got a 50% drop in income because now it's just tourists going from A to B. So what does that equate to? 50% cut in workforce? So that's just the trucking industry. I read another article about automation in manufacturing. Right? This is something that Apple Computer's talking about doing. Foxconn, one of their major manufacturers, you may have read about the necessity on the part of Apple to put, not Apple, but Foxconn, who contracts with Apple, to put nets around their buildings so people wouldn't commit suicide by jumping off the roof. Well, they're going to solve that problem by automating the process. And I saw an article a while back where Foxconn is building factories in Brazil with no workers, where it'll just be robotics building these things. What's interesting, I find, is that if you have to totally go to the tech-type articles. You don't find this discussion happening in what's going to happen in the coming years because this isn't 10 years away. This stuff is coming soon. The very first place that you will probably see as a typical person spread out somewhere in the United States, the very first place you're going to see an automated car is probably going to be a truck. You may not even know what it is. But you'll probably get to the front and it'll look odd. It'll be designed differently because it no longer needs to comfortably accommodate a human being for a super long distance. I tell you, folks, changes are coming, and it's not the changes a lot of these folks seem to be counting on. And employment, as I've always argued, is at the core of a healthy economy. You know, when everyone was talking about fixing real estate – or build, you know, or that the economy gets solved by building more houses. No, that's not how the economy gets solved. The economy gets solved by creating a demand for housing, which means you have to have people who can afford to buy that housing. It's got nothing to do with whether or not you build a house. It's not a build it and they will come proposition. They can only come if they've got the money. So, and the automation thing is foremost in my mind just because I live in an area where high tech is a very common thing. Most of the folks I work with in terms of clients are in high tech, and it's amazing how much more frequently automation and robotics come up in conversations where there was even another article where fast food will be automated. When you do the drive-through, no human is going to interact with you at all. It's simply going to be you go up, you pay, just like you do it at any other pay and go. I mean, if you've gone into a Safeway recently, you know you can go in, get your groceries, and get out without ever interacting with a human being, right? I'm imagining this is fairly common across most of the country where there's actually several stations set up where you just go and you scan your stuff, you swipe your card, and you're done. You pack up your own groceries and you go. Well, that's the beginning, right? That's the very earliest stages where that a human being doesn't actually need to be part of the process. So a lot of these jobs, and these are the what's really frustrating is that when we talk about unemployment and the recovery, these are the jobs that were created. These jobs that are just kind of not careers are the types of jobs that were created the most over the last few years. So these are the jobs that are going to disappear. They're just going to go away. And as we get – and you've seen how things go. How many of you purchased that really huge television set 10 years ago? How much was it 2 years after you bought it for the exact same TV? Did you pay $3,000 for that cutting edge? It's the best TV, which was already down from the $15,000 it was when it first came out. Suppose, let's say you shopped for that deal. Well, now you realize you can find it for $1,000. And that's just you. Now imagine a world where folks who need manufacturing to happen or need a variety of – or feel they can replace 10 people in a food shift with several machines. It's very – it's not only realistic. It's not only probable. It's going to happen. For those of you who want to look a little bit more into this, let me suggest you pick up a book by Ray Kurzweil called The Singularity. I think that's the name of the book. It'll blow your mind. And this is the futurist guy for Google who tries to figure out where things are going. And I think that even if he's half right, we have a lot of reasons to be concerned about what that potentially means for – and I realize we're whittling it down to a very fine point. But what that means for the real estate industry and what that means for housing demand in terms of having a robust community of folks who are – earning at a level that they can afford to even buy a house at all. It's kind of scary stuff. And if it was 50 years off, maybe it's not worth talking about. But I don't think it's that far off. I think the beginnings of this are less than a decade away. Within the time frame we're talking about, where a lot of these pie-in-the-sky estimates of, oh, yeah, everything's we're going to see great growth for the next 10 years. I'm just a little dubious of that. They throw some numbers at us here that I think are interesting. So we'll go ahead and look at these. Household growth, according to this, will include by race 5.5 to 5.7 million more Hispanic households in 2024 than in 2014. 3.4 to 5 million more non-Hispanic white households. 1.8 to 1.9 million more Asian households. 2.4 million more black households. And 730,000 to 890,000 more other households. It's going to be driven by baby boomers with 12.3 to 12.9 million more households aged 60 and over in 2024 than there are today. Millennials will also be a key component of growth, raising the ranks of household age 18 to 24 by 4.1 to 5.1 million. The lower end of the projection is the result of the Mortgage Brokers Association analysis of demographic trends if sex, age, and race-specific household formation rates remain at low 2014 levels. So all of that's great. All of this can be true. The number of folks can grow. That I don't think that equals a one-to-one relationship between folks, the number of folks who get added to the mix and the number of folks who can afford to participate in the home purchasing process just by virtue of being there, right? It may just mean we have a whole lot of people who end up in a position where they can't afford. It wouldn't surprise me if we end up in a very stagnant situation, very similar to what we have now, where folks are staying with their parents much longer, where you have multi-generational homes being far more common than in the past. I guess I'm just trying to show the potential flip side of the more rosy expectation, but at the same time, I'm not the only one. And what's interesting is the exact same people are indicating trends in the opposite direction. And not only is it the same organization, it's the same writer at the same organization talking about how now we're seeing data that indicates housing demand is cooling for the fourth straight month. Whereas in an article they wrote just a few hours earlier, wow, you know, we can see all this expected growth over the next 10 years. To me, that all smells a little bit too much like wishful thinking. Just by increasing the number of people doesn't mean you increase the number of folks who are capable of participating in the housing market. We've seen that before. I think what we face now is even more dynamic. I honestly think we're going to be in a technological revolution that is going to be very difficult to sort of work through over the next few decades, starting, I think, relatively soon. It wouldn't surprise me if within the next 5 years, things are dramatically different. You know, and one other thing, and I realize this isn't specifically real estate, but it sort of fits in with the technology that's I think going to sort of rock the employment scene and change how people are earning their livings. I think our children, I mean, folks who have kids right now who are just now learning to drive, it wouldn't surprise me if for a vast majority of those kids, this is the last generation of kids that learns how to drive a car with their hands. I mean, I'm teaching my boys to drive. My oldest son is supposed to get his I can drive alone license in a month, 2 months. It wouldn't surprise me if when he has a kid, they won't know how to drive. By that time, there may be some still crazy, archaic rule that you have to know the basics of what the wheel does and what the pedals do. But by and large, it'll all be automated driving. And it wouldn't even surprise me if at some point you don't even have to have a driver's license to be the only person in an automated car. I'm sure they'll have it for a while. The paranoia levels will be high enough. But after a few years, they'll simply make it that the car can just take you. And you don't have to have a license in order to just sit in the car and get taken from A to B. Just think about that for a while. Think about how the world changes. And think about if we have devices that can do that, think about all the other things that the responsibility can be taken away from the human participant and then how that affects the workplace. And these aren't things we're tentatively heading towards. These are things people are putting billions of dollars behind to push forward technologically as quickly as possible. Everything has growing pains. I don't think this is any exception. So, and now taking it sort of back to housing demands. Now, most of this data came from Redfin's housing demand index, which we actually talked about before. But home buyer activity prior to purchase decreased 5% in July, falling to 108 from 113 in June. Now, that's the fourth consecutive month-over-month decline. That's interesting because that's in the peak period when we would expect growth, not decline, right? And that's what you want to look for. You want to understand what the trends are in various time frames and figure out if the numbers are going along with the trend or they're bucking the trend. If they're going opposite of the trend, that's kind of creepy. And it's worth looking into a little bit more to try to figure out what that might mean. They give some examples here. So in Denver, half of the new listings sell in 6 days or less. Agents and their customers are seeing the slowdown firsthand. Quote, it feels like the market is at a standstill. Showings have dropped off significantly. And that's, you know, and that's real on the ground experience speaking, saying, yeah, you know what? In my business, I have felt it. Home buyer demand was up 9% year over year in July, but if the folks on the ground are interpreting that as a dramatic halt. Home prices across 15 major metro areas are projected to rise 2.2% and sales to increase 2.6% year over year. Now, we'll have to see. This is a relatively new model that the folks at Redfin are using. We'll see if it ends up panning out. It wouldn't surprise me if things have slowed down a bit more than they're expecting. Now, the next thing was from CNBC, and the stock, and this related to the stock volatility. But they took the angle they took was that the stock volatility that we're seeing could weaken housing demand. Now, I mentioned the China downturn earlier, and the reason why I did is because it sort of fits in with this housing demand picture. One big thing that China has been doing is buying American real estate. They have been huge influencers in Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, San Francisco, San Jose. They've been huge players in terms of purchasing properties. A lot of that has been at the luxury level, but not exclusively. So by having less participation on the part of the Chinese, which is clearly going to happen, they've had a major financial downturn, that translates in some areas to less competition from overseas buyers. So that may, and that's going to be a great thing for some folks. It's not going to be a broad change, but the effects that spill over to the U.S. economy, what we're seeing in our own stock market, this is absolutely going to translate into folks being far more cautious about how they, A, spend their money, and B, how confident they are about what's happening with the economy now and where things are going to go. One thing that they mention here is that confidence is taking a hard hit from swings in the U.S. stock market, volatility in overseas economies, and uncertainty over interest rates. I think that's all absolutely true. The folks who are looking to buy are trying to find the right time. I still have people contacting me who've been shopping for months who just haven't been able to make it happen. And now they're thinking maybe that was a lucky thing. Maybe we're lucky we didn't get something because I'm not real sure about what's going on with this economy. I don't get optimism. When I talk to clients, I don't get optimism. They go on here to quote Zillow's chief economist, between the Greek default, war, plummeting oil prices, and most recently fears of a Chinese slowdown, it's been a volatile summer. Like swimming with a bully in the pool, it seems like every time the market comes up for air, something comes along and pushes it right back down again. Let's see. I think that was all from there. The only other person I wanted to quote was our best buddy Lawrence Yun from the National Association of Realtors, where he says, the fact that first-time buyers represented a lower share of the market compared to a year ago, even though sales are considerably higher, is indicative of the challenges many young adults continue to face. Yeah, you think? I guess the bottom line here is I just don't see the optimism in the growth. I'm not sure a lot of it's founded. I think factors that people aren't even thinking about are a bigger player in this, particularly a lot of the economic things relating to the Chinese market problems, our most recent market problems. So what does that mean for home demand? I just don't see the dramatic growth that a lot of folks seem to be talking about. I think we'd see a flattening primarily or more of a stagnation in that. And as far as how that affects you, you'll tend to see it. Now, if you're a buyer in a marketplace right now and you're shopping around, you're going to anecdotally observe that, right? You're going to see properties coming on the market, and let's say you're used to them being gone in a week. Well, maybe suddenly they're not gone in a week. They're lasting on the market longer. Maybe you're making offers and finding there's not a lot of other people making offers at the same time. Maybe it's not a multiple offer situation. Maybe you're finding that sellers are willing to negotiate with you because there are no other offers in. So what would my suggestion be? I would not, if you're in the market and you're buying and you're there and you're going to do it, I would say don't take off for the winter. Don't just stop looking or trying to sell in November and December. I say keep pushing through those months. Sellers that stay on the market in those months are serious about selling. Buyers that stay on in those markets, particularly in markets where the weather turns bad, people tend to not want to search for homes in bad weather. As a buyer, that gives you an example if you're willing to put up with that stuff. So keep pushing through. As this sort of softens, the willingness of folks to push through in the wintertime is going to soften as well, and that might just make it a perfect opportunity for you to take advantage of a little bit of a softening in housing demand. So I hope that helps you out. Now, if you would like to give me any suggestions on shows that you'd like to have me do, please head on over to therebelbroker.com. If you'd like to show your support, very easy to do. Head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. Let's say you don't use iTunes. That's fine. If you use Stitcher or something else, just go on over there and write a review. It's very helpful for me, my understanding of how the math works at iTunes in terms of putting a show up to new and noteworthy and those kinds of things, to get it on that front page. Is the number of reviews that, or the frequency of reviews for a show. And that would absolutely be a fantastic way for you to show your support for the show. So I would appreciate it if you could take the time to do that. You can also head on over to www.therebelbroker.com. After about 10 seconds of being at the page, a dialogue will pop up. If you want to join the Rebel Nation and be on the list of folks who will get free content material, updates when there's going to be webinars, those kinds of things. You'll also get as my free gift, the top 12 plus one bonus, questions to ask your real estate agent before you engage them as your buyer or seller agent. So head on over there to get that. And once you've submitted your information, you will get that free gift emailed to you directly. So make sure to take advantage of that. Thanks again for listening, everybody. I hope you have a great one, and I will talk to you tomorrow.